Prime Minister, Mr. Minister, distinguished visitors from the United States of America and other distinguished guests, ladies and gentlemen, this function has been arranged by the Minister for Supply to mark the official opening of the Honeysuckle Creek Tracking Station. Ladies and gentlemen, I now present the Minister for Supply, Senator the Honourable Denham Henty.
Prime Minister, Mrs. Holt, Dr. Siemens, Mrs. Siemens, Mr. Buckley, distinguished guests and ladies and gentlemen. I have a very happy duty this morning. I love happy duties, and this is a very happy duty indeed, of extending to you all on behalf of the Department of Supply and the Commonwealth Government a very warm welcome to this opening of this very important station. I'd like to extend a very special welcome to our Prime Minister. Sir, we're honoured to the fact that you would give time to us today to come, well, it's not so far out really, is it, but to come to us and open this very important station, this Apollo station, which is here with us by the cooperation of the American government and the Australian government. So we have with us too Dr. Siemens and Mrs. Siemens. Dr. Siemens is the represents the National Aeronautics and Space Administration, NASA as we know it, the agency of the United States government. And he comes to us today as the administrator, deputy administrator of this great organisation, NASA, which stretches across the world, plays such an important part in Australia itself as well, because we have a number of stations, I think five in all now, Doctor, this is of great importance to us. I welcome also the deputy administrator, the associate administrator, Mr. Buckley, who is with us today, and Dr. Christopher Kraft, Operations Director of the Houston Manned Spacecraft Center. It's all right, sir. Mr. Tech Roberts from the Goddard Space Flight Center. I extend them a warm welcome and say we are indeed delighted to have them here with us today. And Doctor, I would like, last time when we opened Aurora Valley, we had Congressman George Miller, one of the grand old men of space, really, I think. And I would like you to convey to him our kindest regards and say how sorry we were that he was not able to be with us again at this time in this important station, although I understand the reasons why he couldn't be. I understand he has a very important congressional committee in which he has to be there as the chairman. We enjoyed his visit and we've enjoyed his help. The Department of Supply, of course, is responsible for the performance of the stations. But Australian industry has played a very vital part, indeed, in the staffing and the operation of the stations. Honeysuckle Creek is operated for the Department by the Standard Telephones and Cables Proprietary Limited. And I extend a very warm welcome to the Chairman of STC, Mr. Remington, and the company's Managing Director, to Samuel Jones, who is with us, both with us here today. A great deal of planning, hard work and skill have been put into the siting and the construction of this station. The design and supervision of construction were carried out by the Department of Works. We've had tremendous cooperation from a number of departments, which I will recall in a moment or two. T.H. O'Connor Proprietary Limited was responsible for the construction, and the Department of the Interior made the land available to us. We're indebted to the Postmaster General's Department and Overseas Telecommunications Commission because they provided the vital communication links for transmission back to the centres in the United States and to other parts of Australia. The staff of the station itself has worked splendidly to bring this station and its complex equipment up to the present state of operational readiness. I can say, quite frankly, I never thought they would do it in time, because there were difficulties in carting all this out to what was at this at the early stages, of course, over a bush track. And I think that everybody has done a great job in getting it done in time. And I'd like to thank all the people and organisations concerned with this project for what they have done. And a special thanks to the Army and the Navy, who have also helped us so much. The opening of a station such as this, which is destined to take part in the exciting and almost incredible space exploration, is a great event. And it gives me very great pleasure indeed to extend to all of you who have come here to a warm welcome to this very important opening ceremony, which the Prime Minister is going to do for us in a moment or two.
Ladies and gentlemen, I now present the Prime Minister, the Right Honourable Harold Holt.
Senator Henty and Mrs. Henty, Dr. Siemens and Mrs. Siemens, Mr. Buckley, many other distinguished guests here today, and ladies and gentlemen, and all associated with this great project. It's a personal pleasure to me, for a variety of reasons, to be here at this time, if for no other reason than because, like you, I'm enjoying this bracing Canberra air and this beautiful Australian setting. At least, Dr. Siemens, you'll be able to report that Australia does live up to its travel brochures as to its sunshine and the beauty of its quite unique fauna and geography as we see it around us. It's not a very frequent occasion, of course, for a Prime Minister to be addressing himself to a matter of this kind. I've done so very rarely. Prime Ministers, if they are to succeed, are not so much concerned with outer space as keeping their feet firmly on the ground. Sometimes their opponents accuse them of being up in the air. Even their most fervent admirers are not known to say that they're out of this world. So I come before you as one who addresses you with all the valour of ignorance about this rather esoteric area of human activity, which is exemplified for us in this quite awesome a piece of equipment under which some of us at least are sheltering here this morning. But it is a notable occasion in a chain of events which have had considerable significance for Australia and which we hope is enabling Australia to play a useful and helpful part, not only in the space program of the United States itself, but in what has become one of the happier ventures of mankind, in which politics tends to be submerged and the aspirations of mankind, the achievements of science, can be largely shared throughout the world. This particular tracking station, so auspiciously situated and so happily named, I think Honeysuckle Tracking Station is a delightful name for an institution such as this. It would be attractive in relation to almost any activity. If you were to come here, Dr. Siemens, and say you were tracking square at Honeysuckle Creek, there might be a different interpretation placed on your activities by the Australians who would be familiar with that vernacular. But here we have a new tracking station which is to play its own useful part in a great human adventure. And this adventure into space is something which an older generation such as my own can scarcely comprehend. It's the stuff of science fiction, of space fiction, of earlier times made reality in our own day and generation. And as we reflect on these things, it's fitting that we should give due tribute and regard to those pioneers in science down through the centuries who have made possible by their earlier adventures of the human mind and body and by the achievement of these pioneers of genius, they, by their efforts, have given us the kind of instruments and the scientific method of experiment which makes this sort of achievement possible. I mentioned at the outset that it was a happy circumstance that those great powers who have interested themselves in this particular area of human achievement have approached their tasks with the objective of bettering mankind's knowledge of its environment and of contributing to peaceful purposes and to an improvement of man's standards of living. And this vital aspiration is certainly shared by the two great powers, the United States of America and the Soviet Union. And with amazing technical achievements to be put at disposal of man's efforts to shape his world towards meeting his material needs and opening new doors to his understanding himself and the universe in which he lives, we owe much to these two great countries. The United States National Aeronautics and Space Act became law on the 29th of July, 1958, less than 10 years ago, and it was then stated officially as United States policy in that legislation that activities in space should be devoted to peaceful purposes for the benefit of mankind. In a modest way, Australia had commenced cooperative activity in the International Geophysical Year, 1957, by operating a tracking system known as Minitrack at Woomera. And now we have, from that beginning, added Carnarvon in Western Australia, Cooby Creek in Queensland, Woomera in South Australia, Tidbinbilla, Oral Valley, and now Honeysuckle Creek, all of these last three in the Australian Capital Territory. The United States has financed the cost of construction, and by the end of the year, the Space Authority will have spent more than $100 million in Australia. You're used to juggling figures in billions, Dr. Siemens, but for Australia, this is a considerable sum to be spent inside the borders of our continent for these scientific purposes. The cost of operating the six Australian stations currently is about $8.5 million a year. There is an appropriateness, I think, that Australia should be in the picture in this particular field, because Captain Cook's own voyage of exploration, which led to the settlement of Australia, was made on behalf of the Royal Society to observe a transit of Venus across the Sun almost 200 years ago. And so we feel that we are appropriately placed to be playing a part now in another great exploration, that of space. We've been associated with the United States program since its early days, as the illustration I gave earlier would suggest. And for nearly 10 years now, we've joined in facilitating American space activities. We've helped to select sites and construct stations in Australia, and their manning includes scientists and technologists from the Department of Supply and Australian Industry, altogether some 700 persons from these sources. The Australian government purchased and made available to the Space Authority 900 acres of freehold land for this present station, a practical contribution to the space program itself. This station is directly concerned with Project Apollo, which will launch into space three manned capsules as part of a program of experiments which will culminate in a voyage of some 3 days' duration to the moon, 250,000 miles away. The Australian group of stations represent the largest complex of space authority stations outside the United States. And I think I'm correct in saying, Dr. Siemens, that in the Apollo project, there will be three tracking stations which will be following the course of the moon vehicle beyond the 10,000 mile limit. One in the United States, one in Spain, and this one here in Australia. And I think we can feel gratified and take some pride and indeed satisfaction that on what will prove to be one of the great historic events of man's exploration of his universe, we shall be one of the three countries right in the picture, literally, so far as the concluding phases of the flight are concerned. Some people wonder whether all this vast expenditure that goes into the space programs can be justified. And the answers are not difficult to find. Already, we have been deriving great benefits from the program of space adventure. If you take meteorology, that's an easy one, I don't know why I'm fumbling with that, and there's not a human being on Earth who isn't daily concerned with the state of the weather. It's our most familiar personal greeting when we see each other in the course of the day. The weather can now be viewed on a global scale several times a day. This can be done regularly in regions of the Earth which have previously defied around-the-clock meteorological observation. The poles, the oceans, the sparse areas of the southern hemisphere have now been brought into the range of weather forecasting. And this also has an aspect which would commend itself to all of us in enabling us to avoid the worst effects and havoc of hurricanes, cyclones, and typhoons. For example, in 1961, quite early in the program, people were evacuated from the path of Hurricane Carla as a result of warning data received from the Tyros, a satellite. In navigation, satellites can play a helpful role today. In international communication, we've already achieved the first telecast between Britain and Australia. We are but at the beginnings of this improvement in communication, and before we're all very much older, the world can be in television contact as a normal and everyday event. There has been a notable contribution to the knowledge of geography, our study of geology. Our understanding is assisted by the information we receive from special satellites designed and equipped for these purposes. Man's superior ability to explore and record details will provide valuable information as to measurements. Direct photographs, soil and rock samples, a vast array, in short, of scientific data. The initial landing on the moon, proposed by 1970, may lead to longer journeys and wider exploration and culminate in the establishment of a permanent moon base, a project which a few years ago would have been thought quite fanciful, even if it were to appear in the realm of fiction. There have been other benefits already directly attributable to the space exploration effort. Great advances in materials such as ceramics, metals and plastics. Metal alloys specially developed have led to improvements For example, they've been found ideal for the manufacture of artificial parts for the human body. For such necessary assistance to hip and elbow joints. Special knowledge of foods developed for astronauts may help the world in its search for the solution of food problems. And for Australia, we have a growing number of men and women technically trained to handle complicated concepts and the complicated equipment associated with space technology. Australia has found already many benefits to its own technological development. And it may interest you to know that last month, Qantas, with the cooperation of the tracking station at Kubi Creek, experimented in air-to-ground voice communication by satellite with encouraging results. Mankind needs the incentive of space exploration in order to develop to full potential some of these great possibilities. And this vast spurt of human imagination and technological progress is opening new doors to experience and achievement. It carries with it, of course, its own hazards. Fortunately, disasters have been few. But we should all remember here today the sacrifice made by Grissom, White and Chaffee as they were playing their part in this scientific evolution. We welcomed here, some of us in this gathering, I've no doubt will recall with great pleasure, Walter Shearer and Frank Borman and their wives. And we pay tribute to the courage, the skill, and determination of these brave pioneers of tomorrow who make it possible for us to realize the aspirations of this great venture. Finally, ladies and gentlemen, may I refer to this as another welcome illustration of the friendly and mutually helpful teamwork which over the years, and more particularly over recent years, has been demonstrated between the United States of America, our great ally, and our own country of Australia. This stands as a symbol to that friendship and to that teamwork and an alliance which we hope will endure for as long as our two countries remain national entities. And so, as I open formally this tracking station, and have with you a vision of what it can contribute to this program in the future. May I adopt the words of Tennyson as a fitting conclusion. Forward, forward, let us range. Let the great world spin forever down the ringing grooves of change. I declare the station formally open.
Ladies and gentlemen, I now present Dr. Robert Siemens, Deputy Administrator of the National Aeronautics and Space Administration.
Prime Minister, Senator Hennie, distinguished guests, ladies and gentlemen. Mr. Prime Minister, you so eloquently described our space program, I wonder if anything more need be said today. I even wonder if you could spare a little time to come over and meet with our budget committees in the States at some point. However, I must say that I have been a long-time admirer of Australians and Australia, and I'm certainly very happy to be in your country, and certainly particularly happy to be able to participate with you in this dedication exercise as we open this most important tracking station here at Honeysuckle Creek. I was reading your Daily Telegraph yesterday, and found a very interesting article called An Ear to Man on the Moon. And I found it a very factual and good discussion of this station and the role it's going to play. I did, however, find one paragraph that at first seemed slightly discordant. In this paragraph, it said that there are still a few diehards who remember all the game in this lovely valley before modern equipment drove the game to other pastures. Now, I would agree with the diehards that this is truly a magnificent sight, and I want you to know that we intend to work with you and to keep it so. As a matter of fact, the Cape Kennedy area has long been known as a bird sanctuary, and we have been working with our own Department of the Interior to keep it a bird sanctuary as well as a launching platform for our Apollo and other rocket systems. And looking around, I think there's plenty of room here for not only this tracking station, but for a great deal of wild game. Now, I do share the diehards' concern about our natural resources. We don't have limitless fish and wildlife in the world. We don't have limitless food or fuel. We're finding in our own country that there is a limit to the amount of water. And in certain of our cities, we're finding that there is not air like this, but there's a limit to the amount of air that's available. And so we must learn all that we can about the ecology of the earth so that we can conserve our natural resources and use our assets appropriately. Now, in the past, before the day of the rocket, of course, considerable exploration has been carried out over the surface of the earth, over the water, in the atmosphere, and we have taken many measurements looking from the surface of the earth out into space. But the rocket has given us space platforms, both manned and unmanned, that have opened whole new opportunities for study of our environment and the universe in which we live. These the Prime Minister has already referred to here this morning. We are learning, for example, about the sun. We think of the sun as something that is very stable. It is always providing us with the energy and the heat that we need. But we're also learning that there are solar flares that shoot off from the surface of the sun that give us highly intense radiation in the vicinity of the Earth, as in other parts of our solar system. And we're learning to better understand these solar winds and the impact that they have on the Earth and the environment about us. We're learning, for example, that in addition to the magnetic fields about the Earth that we have known existed for a long time, that there are heretofore unknown radiation belts about the Earth. These were literally not known prior to the first Explorer flights. When the first flights went off into space, we thought that the instruments were in error, that the radiation could not be so large. We now know that the radiation is there, trapped by the magnetic field of the Earth, that this is energy that has come from the sun. We know that this energy is stored about the Earth as in a storage battery, and from time to time, this energy seeps down into the poles and gives us our aurora borealis and materially affects weather and other conditions here on Earth. We're learning, of course, about our own atmosphere, about its consistency and inconsistency, about its motion, about the cloud cover about the Earth. I know it's come as a great surprise to me that over half the Earth at any one time is covered by cloud. And this is a matter that not only is important in its own right, but can serve to interpret the weather for us and can give us better and better weather forecasts. At this time, using our cloud cover information, we can predict the weather more reliably, perhaps as much as a day or two. In time, by still further studies, scientific studies, and still further instrumentation of our satellites, we are going to try to extend our forecasts and believe that we can for periods of 1 or 2 weeks. Now we're broadening our measurements from space to include studies of oceanography and hydrology and forestry and agriculture and geology and many, many other fields. Now, through this new scientific understanding and development of technology, we, as I've already said, and as the Prime Minister have said, have improved our weather forecasting. We've vastly improved our communication. We're improving our navigation. And there will be many other improvements that come with time as we develop the technology and better understand the science. And Mr. President, we in NASA, we in all the United States, are diehards. We intend and we want to ensure that science and technology will provide a better world for all mankind. Now, you here are directly opposite us in one sense. You're directly on the other side of the world from the United States. This means that all of our satellites, when they take off from Cape Kennedy, come very close to the northwestern part of Australia. However, you have been working with us in many, many arenas, and we appreciate the close support that we're receiving from you in many of these arenas, including the work that we're doing in space. We know that the Australian stations have played a vital and indispensable role in our space program. And let me just mention a few of the roles that these stations are playing. At Auroro Valley, right nearby, during the past year, we received data from 40 different scientific satellites orbiting the Earth. We've received data on these radiation belts that I have discussed, on the solar winds, on the magnetic fields. At Toowoomba, we are now receiving from our so-called application technology satellite weather data on a daily basis. This is a satellite that is located at the equator at an altitude of 22,000 miles, so it appears from the Earth to be sitting right on top of the Pacific Ocean, and the cameras can look out and see all of North America, South America, Australia, Japan, and a very large Pacific area in between. We are photographing every hour or two the Earth, and in this way obtaining cloud cover information over nearly one half the Earth's surface. This information comes into our own Weather Bureau. It is combined with other data, such as the Tyros data, such as ground-derived data. And from this, we can put together long-range weather forecasts and weather maps and use the same satellite to telefax this information back to all the stations, including Toowoomba, that are in line of sight of this satellite. Your stations at Woomera and Tinbinbilla have been instrumental in the past year in our Surveyor and Lunar Orbiter program. The Surveyor is the spacecraft that landed softly on the moon and gave us very, very detailed information of the structure of the lunar surface. We were able to look at the very fine-grained information, and we're able to determine that the surface of the moon, at least in that location, is strong enough that an astronaut can walk across it, or that the spacecraft can land upon it. With our lunar orbiter, we've derived from three of these satellites that are circling the moon very, very basic scientific information in the form of pictures on the backside of the moon and the near side of the moon, and also a survey of all the possible Apollo landing sites. And we now know that some of the sites that look very attractive from the Earth with telescope are literally riddled with small craters, and no area in the site that we thought would be satisfactory could be used. However, we have found sites that are relatively free from craters that can be used for landing. At Carnarvon, you have supported our Gemini and Apollo programs. And I know that Chris Kraft, sitting out here, has many, many times been in direct communication with this station. And I know that in the past year, as we had our 5 Gemini flights, that there are many times that he was grateful for the very competent team sitting there in that station and working with us. Now we're here today, officially opening this station, and we know that this 6th station will permit us to check out the Apollo vehicles in Earth orbit, to gather data from Apollo as it goes to the moon, circles the moon, and returns from the moon, to communicate with the astronauts during their trip out and back and around and on the moon, and also to gather data after the astronauts leave, for we will implant on the lunar surface instruments which for a period of a year or so will send back seismic and other types of data that will be of great scientific interest. Now, I've been greatly impressed by the dedication, enthusiasm, and technical competence of the Australian station personnel. Many of the people in these stations have worked many, many hours. In this business, you don't work a 40-hour week. When Apollo or Gemini are in orbit, it's necessary to keep the work going on the ground, just as the astronauts have to keep working in space. I know that this new station here at Honeysuckle Creek will receive the same kind of dedicated service that the previous 5 stations have already received. Now, I'd like to extend my thanks and appreciation to the Department of Supply, its Minister, Senator Henty, and its Secretary, Mr. Alan Cooley, for their wholehearted cooperation and for the high quality of supervision and assistance that they have rendered. The Department of Work certainly deserves great credit for the design and contracting of the facility and must share with the contractor, O'Connor and Sons, credit for an excellent job on schedule and within estimates. Finally, I would like to express my thanks to you, Mr. Prime Minister, for honoring us with your presence here today. Your attendance is indicative of the interest Australia has shown in the space program. In order to show you our appreciation for this support and to remind you of this occasion, I would now like to present you with a model of the Apollo capsule. This is the escape valve that comes off after you get out of the atmosphere, the capsule with the 3 men are located. This is the propulsion. Thank you.
You are.
My grandson will be thank you.
I'll check you out on it in detail. Stuff that you keep up with it.
Ladies and gentlemen, Honeysuckle Creek Tracking Station is one of 3 prime stations concerned with the Apollo project to land men on the moon. And to mark this important occasion, messages of goodwill have been received from the 2 other prime stations at Robledo, Madrid and Goldstone, California, and from Carnarvon Tracking Station in Western Australia, which will operate in support of the 3 Apollo stations. Messages have been received also from the Goddard Space Flight Center, Maryland, USA, and the Manned Space Flight Center at Houston, Texas. And these messages will now be relayed to you.
This first message is from Mr. J.T. Mengel, Assistant Director for Tracking and Data Systems, Goddard Space Flight Center, Greenbelt, Maryland.
I am very happy to participate in dedicating the Honeysuckle Creek Tracking Station and in welcoming it to the Manned Space Flight Network. I am sorry that circumstances do not permit me to be with you in person. Australia's partnership with the Goddard Space Flight Center in tracking and data acquisition dates from the beginning of our space program. This cooperative effort has been most pleasant and productive. Carnarvon, Aurora, and Luchet and Woomera before them have set extremely high standards of performance. we are fully confident of the same outstanding support from Honeysuckle Creek. I say this with full recognition of the vital role you are to play in support of lunar mission operations. Again, best wishes and warm regards to all our friends in Australia from the Goddard Space Flight Center.
The second message is from Dr. Robert R. Gilruth, Director of the Manned Spacecraft Center at Houston, Texas.
Ladies and gentlemen, I'm happy that Dr. Kraft is able to attend your dedication ceremonies of the Honeysuckle Creek Tracking Station. On behalf of the other people here at the Manned Spacecraft Center, it is a real pleasure to welcome Honeysuckle Creek into the Manned Space Flight Network. To us at the Manned Spacecraft Center, one of the most rewarding aspects of the Manned Space Program has been the opportunity to work with the people of Australia in joint pursuit of space goals which can benefit all mankind. Let me say that we look forward with much pleasure to expanding our friendships in your wonderful country with the people at Honeysuckle Creek. Congratulations on a fine new station and our best wishes to you for every success in future years. Thank you.
The third message is from Mr. Otto Wermick, Station Director of the Apollo Tracking Station at Madrid, Spain.
We of the Manned Space Flight Tracking Station in Madrid, Spain, wish to extend a most hearty welcome into the worldwide Manned Space Flight Network to the Honeysuckle Creek Tracking Station. We wish you the best of luck and a good handover to us on the Apollo missions.
The fourth message is from Mr. George Farris, Station Director of the Apollo Tracking Station at Goldstone, California.
To all our friends at Honeysuckle Creek Tracking Station, congratulations on the dedication of your new station and a warm welcome to the network. We at Goldstone Apollo are happy to share this occasion with you. Goldstone Apollo is proud and happy to be with you on the network team and to share with you in what surely must be one of man's noblest efforts, the exploration of space. We are looking forward to working with you in this endeavor and in sharing with you the ultimate satisfaction of a job well done.
The fifth message is from Mr. Lewis Wainwright, Station Director of the Carnarvon Tracking Station, Western Australia.
On behalf of the Carnarvon staff, greetings and welcome to the network. I have just been speaking to Jerry O'Connor, who was the communications technician at Mushay at the time of John Glenn's flight 5 years ago last month. Jerry was the first Australian ever to speak to a space traveler. We wish you success and look forward to the day when a man from Honeysuckle speaks to an explorer on the moon.
Now, ladies and gentlemen, we're awaiting messages to come from astronaut Frank Borman, who flew in space in Gemini 7 for 14 days, and from the Vice President of the United States, Mr. Hubert Humphrey. Frank Borman's message comes from Cape Kennedy, and the Vice President's from Washington.
Goddard voice testing, testing 1, 2, 3. Mr. Prime Minister, this is Frank Borman talking. I'm down here in Florida now at Cape Kennedy. I've been here for 2 months investigating the accident that we had on Apollo 204. I can't help but remember that last year at this time, Wally Schirra and our wives and myself were in Australia. I'm sure that we've never adequately thanked you for your great personal hospitality and the wonderful friendliness of all the people in Australia. I'd like to take this occasion by very many wires and tape recorders and other electronic gear to again express my deep gratitude for the wonderful reception that we had in Australia. Susan and I look forward to seeing you again, and I hope that I will be able to talk to you through Honeysuckle Creek on the lunar mission. Goodbye and good luck.
Mr. Prime Minister, I have with me today a very dear friend of yours and a very great American, our ambassador to Australia, your friend Ambassador Ed Clark. And we both want to extend to you our heartiest greetings of sincere and warm friendship. Now, it's a great pleasure for me to send you our best wishes on the occasion of the dedication of the Honeysuckle Creek Station. The establishment of this tracking station is another link in the long chain of cooperative efforts in space between the Commonwealth of Australia and the United States. In its support of the Apollo program, this new station will play a vital role in communications with our astronauts in preparation for their landing on the moon and return to Earth. Now, we are delighted that Dr. Robert Siemens, Deputy Administrator of the National Aeronautics and Space Administration, and Mr. Edmund Buckley, who heads NASA's Tracking and Data Acquisition Program, are there with you today as our representatives. Their presence reaffirms our interest in continuing the close and friendly cooperation which has existed between our two great countries. Together, we are engaged in an exciting and challenging enterprise, the extension of man's scientific knowledge of his universe and the application of the benefits of space exploration to all mankind. My best wishes to you, Mr. Prime Minister, and to those fine and great people of Australia.
And now, ladies and gentlemen, the official party will now make a tour of the station, and arrangements have been made for you all to see the station, and I'd ask that you follow behind the official party in a few moments. Now, the route through the station is clearly marked. The station staff will explain the equipment and its functions, but space is restricted inside the station, and I would ask your indulgence should there be any slight delays. The Minister for Supply requests the pleasure of your company at luncheon at the end of the tour of the station. Thank you.
crowd.
I might get these on first.